Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. It is now time for Inside Matters Spiritual Talk Healing Done Right. Spiritual growth, 12-step indigo meditation, and much, much more. Hosted by Duchess and Jewel.
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. This is Duchess, and it's that time again. It's 5 p.m. on the first Sunday of the month, and that means it's time for Inside Matters Talk. We have an interesting show for you this evening, and we're going to be talking about magic. We're going to be talking about angels. We're going to be talking about intervention. We're going to be talking about love, light, and laughter. It's a wonderful, wonderful day for all of that. Before we get started, I want to share some, well, we're going to have a guest speaker today, and she's going to talk about how she transitioned and into love in the most unusual way. And before we get to her, I'll introduce her in a minute, she and her partner, I'm going to talk to you about some magic that's been going on around my house. It's really been uncanny. I've been going, like, wild with all the blessings floating all around me. I had an experience on the 7th of last month where, remember the book that we talked about that I did a book review on called E Squared? And that was energy, you know, squared, and the 9 experiments so that you can know that you're in tune and in vibe with the universe and all things within, without, and all around you. And at that time, I did one of the experiments, and at that time, the experiment of the E Squared book was for me to make some divining rods. So I made these divining rods, and in doing the divining rods, I was able to make the energy work and flow for me. Well, on the 7th, I was in my apartment, and I was trying to decide whether or not I was going to move. So I picked up my divining rods, and I made these makeshift divining rods with some wire hangers, 2 wire hangers, and 2 straws. And with these 2 wire hangers and straws, I'm able to ask the energy in my space whether or not I should do things. You know, I play with them. And this particular day, a month ago, I said, well, do you think I should move? Should I move? And I held them there. And I said, well, if I should move, please, I want you to swing to the right of me. And if I should stay, I would love for you to swing to the left of me and say yes. Well, I'm holding these rods, and nothing is happening. So I started laughing. Oh, I guess you don't want to talk to me today. So I took my little makeshift divining rods, and I put them down on the table. And as I'm leaving the house, I'm taking pictures with this disposable camera, because I wanted to show some pictures of my trip to Missouri last month. Now I'm taking these pictures of my living room because I want my friend in Missouri to see what my living room looks like, and I go on about my way, and I develop the pictures, and then I get the pictures, and I show the pictures around to everyone, and now, last week, I'm ready to send these pictures off, send a couple of pictures to my mother, send pictures to my friend, and do all kinds of you know, things like that. Well, it was amazing. I'm looking at the pictures, and then all of a sudden, right there in the picture, on my television set that was off, in big, block, bold, orange-looking red letters was the word don't, D-O-N apostrophe T. Talk about spooky. Now, for some people, and when people see that, and I show them this picture, they throw the picture down like, get out of here. That's crazy. But for me, that was phenomenal. That was a phenomenal occurrence. So I know the energies around me. We have the archangels around. We have the ancestors around. We're never, never alone. Now, some of us are afraid to make this connect. Well, I'm not afraid to make this connect because I instruct them, don't come and approach me in any other way except the way that's going to make me feel comforted and not afraid. So, another thing that's happened this past couple of weeks, a friend of mine came by with oodles and oodles and oodles of wonderful, wonderful metaphysical type books and oracle cards and things like that. And I was able to give some to my grandchildren. Now, my 4-year-old granddaughter, she likes unicorns, and I have a Doreen Virtue deck of unicorn cards, and I gave them to her. She saw those today. She's not allowed to take them out of my house. She can play with them when she's in my environment, but she's not allowed to take them home. And so she played with them, and I mean, it was the hardest time taking those cards and telling her they had to go home, back home into the box. She held them to her chest. She loved these cards because they're so beautiful. And the 9-year-old, I gave her a deck of cards with mermaids and dolphins, and she's, like, really fascinated with her deck. And the grandson, he has a birthday on the 11th. He's our 9/11 baby. He's born the day after my brother, who is September the 10th. He has the water oracle cards. So before we get started, let me see if I can bring our guest in here online before I give her this introduction, because I see I've lost her call, and I know she's waiting, and I really want to get this started because she's excited about being on the show, and I don't want her to think that I don't see that she's gone. So everyone hold up while I dial this number and see if I can get her back here. Okay. There you go.
Hello?
I see where I lost you, Catherine, and so I figured I better call you again and give you this introduction live while it's in your ear without saying I'll call you back and I'll bring you back. So how about I introduce you
I think that's a great idea.
Okay, because I don't want to lose you again. Okay, everyone, this is Catherine Young, and Catherine is a writer. She's an artist, and she's a highly regarded hypnotherapist. She has a deep belief in the powers of healing and personal transformation. In her words, almost everyone has struggles throughout their lives. Regardless of the particular challenge, it always requires a dose of courage to face and overcome obstacles in our path. Now, her book, Transcending the Razor Wire, is a true story. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the term razor wire, that's that barbed wire-looking wire across the prison fences. And while it looks like barbed wire, I had one of my sons, who's familiar with the razor wire, show me pictures so I knew the difference between the razor wire and a barbed wire. The razor wire has like razors-looking things wrapped around its barb. No, wrapped around its wire, and barbed wires has those little prickly, spoky-looking things. To give you a brief description. Now, this book, it's about the transformative power of love, and we all need that. And how one woman's search for the divine led her to an unlikely yet life-altering love affair. And with that, I'm going to give you Catherine Young, and she's going to tell us a little bit of how she got into the prison ministry and how this progression evolved into the love of her life, her relationship current this day. Go ahead, Catherine. Give us a little blurb about your book.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for having us on, too. Frank's sitting right beside me, and he thought he was reading your little introduction online, and he says, "What a nice introduction. We have known each other. We were trying to remember, because when we met, it wasn't this auspicious moment. It was just, hello, how are you, you know, 20 years ago now. And it just doesn't seem possible. But 20 years ago, and I just had everything in the world, you know, that supposedly one would want. But there was this big hole missing in me that I read spiritual books. I read books, Thomas More, Carolyn Mace, Deepak Chopra, you know, and I was attending meditation classes and doing yoga because I thought I was 59 at the time, a little bit younger than that, but I thought to myself, what? There's got to be more, you know? There has to be more. And so I was praying about it and praying mightily about it, that I would be able to have some direction, that something would be shown to me, that there was a purposeful meaning in my life. I always did a lot of philanthropic things. I volunteered the whole time I raised my kids and through college time, and I just did it. It seemed to me that you should always be in your community, not of the community, but giving back to the community. But still, there seemed to be that there was something more. And I really prayed about it. And one time when I was actually in Palm Springs, I was sitting with my books all around me, because that's what I did when I went to Palm Springs. I just kept reading and meditating. And I just felt there was just something more. And that fall, things started falling in place in really a very highly unusual way. And around Christmas, my sister was supposed to come and visit us, and she's schizophrenic, and we were just excited because I really wanted to make this a beautiful, beautiful Christmas for Teresa, who's no longer with us, but she didn't make the plane. She didn't make the plane. She couldn't do it. And so, but I rode on a train in with this man, and he was, I thought, oh, Catherine, you're really smart. You picked this nice person to sit by. He's very nice. He asked me if he could pick up my Coke and my Cheeto bag, and he pulled out his white cane, and he tapped to the back. I was mortified. I just was like, oh, my God, you know, I should be taking his stuff, you know. But he came back,
right.
And I said, well, yeah, what do you do? And he said, well, I'm an attorney. I do civil rights for prisoners. I just came from Atascadero. I just was blown away. Here this man has these challenges, and yet he's out there, you know. And
right.
And I thought, how marvelous. So he told me how he switched trains and how he got into it. And I thought, that was so wonderful. So we went to, and I was married at the time, went there, and my husband and I went to pick up Teresa, and she was a no-show. And so then we went back home, and that Christmas, which wasn't exactly a Christmas story, we went to see Dead Men Walking. So you know how long ago this was, because it had just come out with Susan Sarandon and Sean Penn. And I've never seen that movie again. It's such a heart-rending movie. But it was
good
express
movie.
What I believed. Yeah, it's a great movie, great movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a painful movie. And so I thought, wow, this is incredible. Well, I believe what she's talking about. What this show exhibits, I believe that people can always change no matter what. And then I had this bad, bad, bad vertigo. I get them about every 10 years where I really scarcely can lift my head. So my daughter had to come out from L.A. down out to Ventura County, and I She had to lead me to the car because I had to creep along the walls. And so she took me over there to the emergency at St. John, and I sat there. It's a Catholic hospital, and I was sitting there, and I looked at this. She sat me across where there are the acts of charity, the acts of kindness from the Jesus' teaching, you know, which was feed the poor, shelter the homeless, visit those sick in the hospital, visit sick. And then there was like highlighted this light on that said visit prisons. And I thought to myself, Catherine, you are really sick. You are one sick puppy. You know, you're imagining this. And I'd blink and I'd open my eyes and I'd look at it again. And I'd look at it again and it was still there. And I thought, this is really weird. And so they gave me the antivirate, a shot of antivirate, and then the pills. And so Deborah took me home and spent the night with me. And I really, it takes me about 2 weeks to get over these really bad ones, bad cases of vertigo. And finally I could go back to church and drive myself over there. And I went to St. Columba's Episcopal Church, any church, it doesn't matter. I'm non-denominational. But I went there and I sat in, and it was so peaceful. It was, the light was coming in. It was so peaceful. And then during the service, our parish minister stood up and said, I'd like you to, you know him, because it was Father Ev, to introduce him. He has something to say to you. He says, and he stood up and said, hi, you know who I am. I'm a retired priest, but I have so delighted in finding something that means so much to me, which is visiting prisons. And I thought, well, I started counting. 1, 2, 3. Okay, this is the fourth prison notice I've been given. And then he said, I invite you to visit prison with me. And I went, oh, my God. And I remember looking up and saying, are you sure you're not directing this at the person at my right? You know? I mean, I really did, because I have a wild sense of humor anyway. And I said, I'm looking around, you know, like somebody's behind me that this is being directed at. And I thought, no, I really think it's me. I said, good heavens. And so I went to Father Ev and I said, can I see that? This is also tells you how long ago it was, that VSH tape. So I went to the fellowship hall, stuck it in and watched it, and I had done a lot of fundraising, a lot of meeting and greeting, and I'd helped build a child abuse shelter, and and I thought, yeah, I can do this. I can do this. And so the organization was sponsored by the Quakers, and so they train me, you know, and you have cases, and they teach you how to handle things if they should come up. And so after about, a couple months of training, we go off to visit prisons. Well, I thought I was going to a woman's prison. Instead, they sent me to a maximum, a men's prison, federal prison, you know, maximum. And I thought, are they sure about this? You know?
Right.
And so I remember driving up, and I thought, it looks familiar, because quite frankly,
You were alone?
No,
Catherine?
Father Ev was assigned. Father Ev was assigned to me, and Ida. And I called them by different names in the book, but that sort of slipped out. Father Ev is no longer with us either. But he was just beautiful. You know, he was a beautiful person. So we go in there and they take our stuff and we have to be approved by the feds and they do background checks. And so we went in and it was just surreal because you put your ID in a bucket. They take it from you, and they put it in a bucket. They take it up to the tower, and then they look at you and from up in the tower where they're standing with guns, and they look down, and, of course, around this whole compound, the yard in between that and the building itself, are just rolls of razor wire, rolls of it. And so across all this dirt, the bucket comes down, your escort, a guard, takes your IDs and walks you across with your papers that you have with you. And then you have to walk between these lines. It's different at each prison, actually.
Right.
And
how many prisons? How many prisons in your ministry did you visit?
Three. And
okay.
Like I say, I really thought I was going to a women's prison, and so I went in there, and I'm from a military family, so I've met a lot of people of different races, and so I was comfortable. I was really comfortable, and they were so glad to see me. I was, you know, something different, a break in their day. They were just happy to have a person that bothered to come out. So many of them said, I know you didn't have to come. We are so grateful. And I just chatted with them. I told them about my dog, my cat. No funny things, jokes on myself, stories, you know.
Okay.
And I always try to wear colors because they don't get to see color. You know, they don't see pink or red or green. They see beige, battleship gray, battleship navy, battleship green. And I believe, because I was an artist, I am an artist, that there is color deprivation. And the color is necessary for you to balance your systems. And that's why we have all these green trees, blue skies, you know, browns, gorgeous sunsets, sunrises. And all that is taken away. See? So their bodies are really not taking in what they should be taking in to be harmonious inside anyway. So
interesting,
and that was very interesting as an artist, and as someone who believes that colors balance you, because you know they're rods and cones, and they go in your eyeball, you see them, and it is just like sound, like music. So you know some can be discordant, and some can be very soothing. So anyway, that's the way color is. And so they don't have any of this stimulus. They're completely sensory deprived. So I went in there and I met the men, and I have to say I cared about them so very much. I came to know them, some longer than others. Some were transferred. One was released. But they meant a lot to me, and then eventually Frank was brought out. And
I need to let everyone that's on the air know that your book, in your book, you convey this feeling and attachment for each one of the individuals that you sat and you spoke with prior to meeting Frank. I mean, you cared about them, and you show it in the book. It's expressed.
Oh, I'm so glad you realized that. I'm so glad I was able to portray that, because I so did. I still do. You know, when I still lived in L.A., I would, like, look for them on the streets to see if I would even recognize them. But I never did see anybody I thought I knew. Because I felt so badly for them, because they're so unprepared for getting out. And it hurts. It hurts to know that they're going to have such a hard time. You know, so So thank you for saying that. I so appreciate that you that I somehow got that across. And I do say that only a couple of them did I refuse to see, and I mentioned that in the book also, and the reason why. But you learned so much. They say you brought so much to me, but all these people brought so much and changed who I was. And this one, and this is the only time this has happened to me, although I've had these what I call coincidences, and I truly believe there are no coincidences, but I just wouldn't jump off a cliff because I saw three pictures of a cliff, you know?
Right.
You have to use your head and your heart together. But I do remember talking with this one man, and I was, you know, the AB that I wrote about, Aryan Brotherhood, and it
right.
was a group I didn't realize I was so prejudiced about. And and I was looking at him, and the first time I sat across from him, I started judging him. And I had never judged anybody when I was there. And I heard this voice in my head, and it was loud. It was scolding. And it said, "Catherine, Catherine, this man has a soul too." And I said, "Are you sure, Lord? You know, I mean," and then I said, "I know, I know." And I sat and I heard his story. And of course, it changed the way I felt.
Right.
And so it's just, you know, that was a way of, you know, I would say, I believe every person, every entity has a soul. However, when I did that and I realized I was judging, I just say, okay, get back there. Get back and be who you say you are. And
absolutely.
Caught me short, you know?
Well, I can tell you caught that I felt, when I read that piece,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I had to be mildly put in my spiritual place as well. You're absolutely right. You know, we all have a soul, no matter, I mean, Hitler had
exactly.
a soul. He just didn't follow the guidance of it, you know, but that little soul
exactly.
can be, that little soul can be fed and nurtured. And yes, everyone has an opportunity to change, no matter what their growing
everyone.
Up circumstances were.
Absolutely. And who are we to judge?
That's true. You know, I got your book open in front of me. And it just flipped open to Frank was a man who had been very hurt in his life from childhood on. Not an unusual
right.
theme in prison, nor in life for that matter. Frank had cause to be distrustful of most people he met, and his trust was something that truly needed to be earned. Yet, but this is my favorite part, yet always his words and his questions were unfalteringly real. For being real was Frank's truth. Being truthful was his code. And I honored his trust. I immediately knew that this person had to be always answered truthfully because the questions he asked required real answers. Truth and keeping his word were crucial to the real Frank. Now, how do you say his last name? Camacho?
Camacho.
Okay, I got it.
Because that made him real in there. So when he spoke in there, they paid attention because he didn't lie.
Right. And that's the first,
and he doesn't lie
the first sign. That's the first sign of a person's innate spiritual health. They do not lie.
That's right.
That's the
they
first sign
lie.
Of a person's spiritual health. They do not lie. They can't lie. They won't lie. And if they tell a lie, they immediately say, "Oh man, I'm lying." because they can't tell a lie without revealing that they're a liar. You know, that's the first sign of spiritual health. If you lie, check, put your spiritual growth in check. If you can tell a lie, no matter, even if it's to a telemarketer, if you can lie,
right,
then put your spiritual growth in check. Am I right?
That's right. Absolutely.
I believe that. Okay. Frank.
Good sound belief there.
You're Frank. Go ahead.
You're right. Well, Frank's right here, and he's sitting, and he can hear you. Apparently, our connection is pretty darn good and loud enough for him to hear. He still gets calls from fellows that have gotten out, and mm-hmm. they call and want to know how it's going and what they're going, and they're encouraging to each other. And I remember just the other night, one of his friends called, and he says, well, you know what to do. And he says, you know the decision to make. You're traveling the true path. You've got
mm-hmm.
it. And so, they still call up. And I think it's great. They're all over the country. They're not. Although we went to Walmart, and we were walking in there, and this fellow walked up to us. It was so funny. And he walked. He didn't walk to me. He walked straight up to Frank. And he said, Frank Camacho, and Frank looks at me and says, oh, my God, I know you. And he says, yes, you do. We were at such and such together. How are you doing? And Frank said, very well. This is Kate. And Frank says, how are you doing? I've got a job, not going back in. And so, you pray they don't. You pray they don't
right.
because they don't have – Frank came out and had an opportunity after being in Guam for a year and some months to change environment. And most of the fellows and women don't get to change their environment. And changing their environment is really a help for changing their life. To go back in the same old thing.
I was gonna wait till later to ask you this question, but I gotta ask you now because you mentioned Guam. Okay, this is near the end of the book, but I was reading how here's poor Frank. He's the parole board has just granted him parole. He has 3 days. Usually they get from 1 to 3 months in order for them to maintain
That's
themselves
right.
back into society. Frank had all of 3 days, and you say they gave him a cab, $200, and some airplane tickets to ship him off to Guam. Okay?
You better believe it.
That's what I was reading. Okay, now here's my question to you, Ms. Catherine Young, who went
yes.
to Guam and met his family and everything and traveled all over
right.
advocating for him. My question is,
right.
how come you didn't meet him to act as a companion for him, or was this a part of you letting him gain his own learning experience? I want to know, how did you just let them and not be his companion, meet him, so that he wouldn't be so alone on this journey out of the prison after what? How many years? 24 years going in. See, I'm telling the story, and you should be telling the story, and I'm being bad. But he'd been there so long, and then he was all by himself.
It was just uh-huh. like Tuesday or Wednesday and Friday they flew him out. And I couldn't get the plane arrangements in then, and I couldn't get it to match his because
Aww.
He went from Tampa to Houston to Honolulu. See, because he doesn't have a passport, and we can't seem to get him a passport, to Guam. Because
now
they
you got to tell everybody
in
how
the United
old
States.
He was when he went in. Because I'm a messed up
Oh, my
story.
Gosh, he was 19.
He was 19.
He was 19.
And
19.
When he got out?
And he went in. And when he got out, he was 19 and 24. So,
44. 40.
Yeah.
40. Somebody 40. Out there is adding.
Frank says 45.
was 45 when you got up. Let me give the call-in number so that people who may be listening on the internet can have an opportunity to dial in. I want everyone to know that our guest call-in line is 347-324-3030. Call in if you want to ask Catherine or Frank any questions. Please press 1, and I'll see you, and because the board is lit up. But I want to see if anyone has any questions to ask either you or Frank, okay? All right, now go back. Okay, Frank he goes in at age 19, and I'm going to be quiet for a minute. Okay.
When he goes in at age 19, my friend who edited the book, she calls him Rip for Rip Van Winkle, and there's some truth to that. For any of the fellows that are women that have been in prison for that length of time, they didn't have cell phones when Frank went in. You know, he used to fix his car. He loves cars. And now they're on computers. It's a different world. And I was really worried about him because I said to him, we were shocked. He called me up a day or two after a day or two after they gave him and said, they're flying me out Friday. I said, no, they give you a month. And he says, no, they didn't. They are flying me out Friday. And so they gave him $200 tickets and dropped him off from a taxi, in front of Tampa International Airport. And he did go make change, and I said, call me. But first of all, I want to tell you, look for those people in the jackets with the little badges and have them get you to their gate. You know, ask those people. That's their job. And so he did, and he said he went there, and he'll tell you. He went there, and he was so scared. There's all this neon. There's all this racket. There's all this color. There's music. The yelling of the gate. And it
babies
was
crying.
Babies crying.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. He should tell you about that sometime, too, because
Let me know when Frank wants to come on. He can come on at any time. Tell us how
he
felt.
He's going to come on right now and tell you. He's going to come on right now.
Okay.
Hello?
Hi, Frank. How you doing?
Good, good. I'm just here listening, and it was just really shock to me after spending all that time. I did 24 and a half years, and, you know, I just got caught up with the wrong people and at a young age and got out at age of 45, and it was just a real big hit on my head. You know, it shocked me.
How many prisons did you have to go through?
Actually, when I left Guam, I first got put at a federal prison in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania, which is considered high maximum security at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And at that time, I did not know about any of the prisons over here. I had no clue. I've never been out of Guam at all at a young age but going to, you know, be locked up in the federal system.
Right.
So I've never actually ever did any traveling at all but to the prisons here in the United States.
And then after the one in PA, Pennsylvania?
And after I went from Pennsylvania, and I ended up in Atlanta, Georgia, federal prison as well. And every single prison that I've been at in the U.S. were federal prisons because Guam has an inner compact with the federal prisons in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Now, Atlanta, Georgia, my brother-in-law, he was a guard in Atlanta, Georgia. During the time you were there, I believe his badge would have said Shahid. Tall, gangly brother. my brother-in-law. So I just figured I'd just find out if you happened to pass him and if he was good to you.
I have no idea.
Okay.
Probably if he would have sold me, you know, he probably remember me. I probably don't remember him. You know, we probably crossed paths because I didn't pay any attention to any of the guards. I was just so confused, you know. I've never been in the system in the United States until they had transferred me. And then, you know, socializing with all these different cultures and nationalities, it really like, whoa, I didn't even know they were real Indians and, you know, all sorts of, you know, I've never met a, you know, I'm like, whoa, am I behind time or something? I mean, what's all this, you know? In other words, I've never, ever mingled or even had, you know, but nothing but my own kind.
That was culture shock for you.
Exactly. So, you know, as time went by, I started to, just blend in with everyone. But at first, you know, it was like, ooh, Indian? Wow, I've never met any Indian. Yeah, as a matter of fact, when I came over here, they thought I was an Indian, and they were asking what tribe I was from. I said, "What are you talking about? What tribe I was from? I'm from no tribe at all. You know, I don't know what you're talking about." Well, you have you have Apache, you have Navajo, you have, you know, this and that. I said, "Well, I don't know any of those. Now, I'm not even part of that." You know, I'm a Chamorro. I'm originally from Guam. Well, where's Guam at? Well, if you don't know where Guam is, well, then I'm sorry, but it's in the South Pacific.
Yeah. That's where it is. And it's still there.
Well, I hope so.
So, Frank, tell me. All right. Yeah. To go through your journey, you were at the airport. You got to Guam. Mm-hmm. Now, how did you get to Raleigh, North Carolina? How did that happen? How did you get from? Because that's not in the book. It ends with you at the airport.
How I got to North Carolina was, Catherine was, you know, she wanted to sponsor me and wanted me to be over here with her because she couldn't travel back and forth at her age.
I did four times.
You know, but, you know, she did four times. But, you know, during that period of time, she, you know, we were always talking about, you know, she can't do it anymore. You know, it's hard on her, you know, because it's like a 30-hour, you know, hours to just fly in a plane. And she's in her 70s right now.
Far.
Yes.
Come on,
Catherine's
going to kill you. Women don't like people telling their age. She's going to kill you when she disconnects you.
That's okay.
Real man.
That's okay. That's okay. I still would love her to death, though. You know. And that's the beauty. And that's the beauty with this relationship here. You know, it's. I really take it so seriously, and. It means a lot to me being with her because not only that she has been there for me, but, you know, I believe that one can, you know, come together if that right person is there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know,
it was great that Catherine was able to, while you were still in prison, go to Guam and talk to your family who hadn't had any contact with you and arrange
Absolutely.
For that contact to be so that they could sponsor you, in essence, out of prison. And I thought that was beautiful. That was beautiful that your family,
and you know,
they stepped up for you.
Yeah, and she did it all. She did all the footwork. You know, she really did. And I really, really so honored that she did that. And she was there, always there for me, you know. and I'm over here.
Well, I don't think she
would have
been there for you, Frank, if you hadn't been the person that you are. You know, a lot of times, every family cannot step up to their family member who is in prison and sponsor them out because, like I was saying, and Catherine was agreeing, there was a thing, there was a code of honesty about you. And that's the first link to your spiritual growth, is that you are honest. I mean, honest to a fault. Some people may find it to a fault. But not everybody, a lot of people like to play the game. You know, so they tiptoe, they play the game, and then what happens?
And I'm not like that. I'm really not like that, because whether it's her, whether it's, you know, other people that I'm dealing with, because it's just like now, I've been out about five years now, five and a half, and I own a lawn care business now. And when I'm dealing with my clients, and when I'm dealing with my clients or whatnot, I'm dealing with them on a straightforward, you know, conversation, you know, and that's just who I am, you know. Why that is, I just don't know, but that's just what it is. You know, it's not in my vocabulary or in my system to try to hide things or try to lie about things.
Right.
You know, it's just, it's not in my nature, you know.
And it's not a weakness. It's a spiritual strength that you, a quality that you have. And it's a beautiful one.
And it's just hard to find people that are just straightforward and honest, you know, because I've met a lot of people that, you know, play the game, you know. And I've met a lot of them in prison like that. And I try to tell them, like, well, you didn't have to do that. All you had to do was be straight up. You know, he would have more respect for you if you were straight up instead of trying to beat around the bush.
Absolutely.
You know, So, that's just me. So,
and that's a beautiful you. That's a beautiful you.
That's it. And I hope it stays that way, you know.
It will.
Well, our show is getting ready
to come to a close, Frank.
Okay.
And I
very, very thank you. Thank you so much.
I enjoy having you and Catherine, and I want you to know that I really appreciate your story, and I'm sending you lots of love, light, and laughter into your life and your future. And
thank you so much.
Wish the best for both you and Catherine. Now, before you go, I got to speak to Catherine because she has to do me a favor.
Okay. Okay, here she is, and I just want to thank all the listeners for listening, and there is a possibility that there you can change. Everyone can change. If I can do
Absolutely.
It, anyone can do it. So here's Catherine, and thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank. Still a blessing.
Well, here I am.
Hi, Miss Catherine.
That was
wonderful.
Hi.
That was wonderful.
Well, that's who he is. And my family loves him. You know, it took a while for them to, like raise an eyebrow, and everybody would say, what has she done? But the loving part was, you know, what agape is, love of humankind. But the eros, the love of one person to another, that took a long time to come. That didn't happen immediately. And I think that was it just didn't occur to me, to tell you the truth. And, nor for Frank.
No.
He just thought I was a nice person, you know. But he was very lucky. His sister Sarah sponsored him. The Guam Parole Board would not allow someone. It had to be a family member. And they wanted him in Guam. And that was just Sarah. And so Sarah stepped up to the plate. And she's a wonderful human being. Oh, yeah. And then I flew over the following, I was there about a week after Frank got out and was in Guam. I was there the next week. And
And I tell you, it was because Frank's from a large family. I'm from a large family, too. But I'd get over there after 30 hours, and I would curl up on the settee there, and all these little kids are running around, and they would do open my eyeballs and everything, and I would be out. And the whole house is running around me, and I am snoring on the sofa. It's quite a journey to get over there, but it's really a pretty place, you know. That it's an island. It's a tropical island, and his family were they are very nice to me.
Well, I told Frank, you know, I really appreciate the two of you sharing your story with us, and the show is getting ready to come to an end. But before we close, you have to do me a favor.
What's that?
You have to tell everybody out there in the listening audience to get themselves together and close their eyes and send out lots of good energy for me to pick the animal medicine card. Okay.
Oh, I love that. I was going to ask you to do that. Okay, everybody,
when you say
concentrate.
When you say ready, I'll pull the card.
Frank, she's going to pull an animal energy card. Okay. Think hard on it. I pulled one for him before, too. Let's see if you come up with the same thing. Okay. Ready.
Ready? Okay.
Ready.
Let's pull the card. Okay, I have your card. And it's Raven.
What's the card?
Raven.
Raven.
Raven's
a messenger.
Nope,
it
is magic. Hawk is the messenger.
Raven is okay.
Now,
okay. Raven is the card. Okay.
If you have chosen Raven, magic is in the air. Do not try to figure it out. You cannot. Power of the unknown at work, and something special is about to happen. The deeper mystery, however, is how you respond to the sparkling synchronicity. See, Kathy, you're talking about coincidences? Well, they're saying the sparkling synchronicity.
How about that?
Of this alchemical moment. Will you recognize it and use it to further enhance your growth? Can you accept it as a gift from the Great Spirit? Or will you limit the power of the Great Spirit by explaining it away? It may be time to call Raven as a courier to carry an intention, some healing energy, a thought, or a message. Raven is the patron of smoke signals or spirit messages represented by smoke. So if you want to send a message to the Blue Road of Spirit in order to contact the ancients, call Raven, or who knows? The ancients may be calling to you. Remember, this magic moment came from the void of darkness, and the challenge is to bring it to light. In doing so, you will have honored the magician within. That's your card, everybody, for the next 2 weeks. That's everybody's card, and Catherine pulled it. Well, I pulled it for her. That was cool. Oh, Kevin, how's Frank doing? He fell out of the tree. Is he healing well?
Oh, he's fine. He fell out of the tree and he's scuffed up, but he didn't break anything. We're over here. He's trimming bushes. You know how we're going to make a family compound? And so he's over here doing the bush work with my daughters and friends. And, you know, everybody was clearing the bush and the plants and the hydrangeas for the start of the project. So we really like that because this is a magical moment.
Wonderful.
This is a magical moment.
And I'll be
Thank
calling
you
and
so
I'll be
much.
Talking to you again because I hear you got another book on the horizon, huh?
That's right. That's right. Another book
okay.
is coming on, and it's more from Frank. So he talks about what he encountered and how he felt when he was coming out.
That's great. That's
okay.
a wonderful thing. Thank you so much for sharing with us.
Oh,
and
thank you, and blessings to you and all the readers.
Thank you.
and listeners.
Okay.
Thank you.
You take
care.
Okay, everyone.
Will do. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, everyone. The name of the book is Transcending the Razor Wire, A True Story. And that was Catherine. And the reason why I brought Catherine on is because there are many, many, many people out there who might want to get into the prison ministry and, you know, go and visit these people that are locked up. And some of them you may find that you're just going to visit may help someone to transcend that razor wire. And need any more be said? No. So with that, I want to say thank you, everyone, for listening. And I love you all. And I wish some people would call in and ask. On that note, I'm going to say our next show will be the 21st, Sunday the 21st. And we have a special guest. Her name is Deborah Harrington, and her topic will be Growing Up Psychic, Honoring the Gift. So if any of you out there want to know if you're psychic, you've had these feelings, you don't understand them, people tell you you're crazy, like people think I'm crazy when I tell them the big letters on my TV said don't. If you have Facebook, go to my Facebook cover page. You'll find it there, but you have to be a friend of mine. I took it down off of Inside Matters, and I put something else up there. But there's a lot of energy going on, a lot of ascended masters, a lot of archangels, a lot of ancestors that have messages that they want to give you, and you don't need to be afraid because they love you, and you can tell them by what ground you will accept the messages from them, because I tell mine, don't come to me face-to-face. You know. Come to me in a dream, and I'll be very, very happy to honor your visit. Good night, everyone. You take care. This is Duchess signing out. Be blessed.